Chapter 22. Owen. I wake up the next day with a pounding headache, the result of drinking far too much Kurza. Rubbing my eyes, I sit up and see that Zara is asleep on the other side of the tent. She'd already drifted off when I returned last night and now looks so peaceful, wrapped up in the coarse blankets. Getting to my feet, I move as quietly as I can so I don't disturb her. 11 hells, I think, grimacing at the pain in my skull. That wasn't alcohol we drank. It was bloody poison. I step out into the light, the heat of the morning sun cooking my skin while the brightness overwhelms my senses. Blinking furiously, I let the flap fall closed behind me, cursing under my breath as the intensity of my headache increases tenfold. When my eyes finally adjust, I make my way to the nearest watering tent. Water, of course, is extremely hard to come by in the wastes, and must be hauled in leather skins from springs miles away. These are stored in large open tents all over the encampment, hanging like bulbous sacks from spindly wooden supports. The lukewarm water doesn't have a good taste, but at least it keeps us from dying of thirst. My mouth feels as parched as the desert around me, my lips painfully chapped. I run my tongue across them, trying to work up a little moisture, but it doesn't help. My tongue like dry venison. When I finally reach the watering tent, I feel like I'm on the verge of collapse. Stumbling, I grab the first water skin I can find, pulling off the stopper and bringing it to my mouth. I don't even taste the dirty leather, guzzling away until I feel I might vomit. Even so, my mouth and throat are instantly relieved, the water quenching the fires left behind by the kurza. Letting out a sigh, I lean against the wooden support of the tent and close my eyes, wanting nothing more than to go back to sleep. I resist the urge to pour some of the water over my head. Light almighty, strike me with lightning the next time I'm tempted to imbibe anything like that again. Memories from last night come rushing back to me. The fight with the manticore, the feast, the dancing, and Zara's rejection in the tent. I wince as that particular memory plays out in my mind. Bloody hells! I toss the empty water skin aside in disgust. What was I thinking? She probably thinks I'm some kind of lecher. How on Bahalia am I going to make this right? My headache, though still present, has lessened somewhat, the pain subsiding to a dull throb. Now that I've had some water, I feel like I'm well enough to get around. I decide to go on a walk to pass some time. The fresh air should no doubt make me feel better, the solitude perfect for gathering my thoughts. Pulling down another skin and cinching it to my belt, I step out from the watering tent and travel to the edge of camp. Along the way, I pass a bushel of dried fruit and grab a handful to serve as my breakfast. With my makeshift quill dagger on hand, I feel prepared enough to step away for an hour or two. The entire camp appears to still be in their tents. Many, no doubt, are sleeping off the effects of last night's festivities. They may be slaves, I think wryly, but they sure know how to throw a party. I make my way out of the encampment without seeing a single person, and soon I'm all alone on a dusty plain following a trail along the hills. Although it's still morning, the sun is already scorching, so I pull up my hood to protect my eyes and face. Looking around, I can't help but marvel at the surrounding landscape. The vast sandy expanse shimmers with heat, creating a wavy effect that's both strange and mesmerizing to behold. To the west, I see the outlines of mountains, the rocky peaks breaking up the desert like tiny red spikes amid a sea of gold. The sand gathers in great dunes, but every so often a vein of crimson stone breaks through the wasteland, adding variation to the yellow hues. As I gaze out at this beautifully bleak wilderness, my thoughts return to the events of the previous night. We had fun, certainly, but we didn't act like ourselves. It was like we forgot who we were. I can't help but cringe at the way I treated Zara, how I acted like a drunken fool. I shake my head in embarrassment. Light, Elias would be ashamed. The memories seem hazy in my mind, but they're still distinct enough to fill me with shame. When I begin to think of what transpired in the tent, I find myself feeling more hurt than anything else. She pushed me away. I wrestle with the complex emotions in my heart. Am I not good enough for her to want me in that way? Did I misread everything? Then I remember what she said to me before I left, her voice surprisingly lucid despite the Kurza. There needs to be a commitment before we allow things to go any further. I love you. I want you forever. That thought sticks with me, like a splinter in my mind, refusing to yield. I ponder it again and again, examining it from every possible angle, trying to discern her meaning. What is our future together, I think, while I continue southward through the barrens? What sort of life can we expect now that we're exiled? What sort of commitment should I make? Can I make? Every question I ask myself spawns more questions, the answers eluding me like smoke in the wind. I'm a ranger, or will be if we ever make it back to Tarsinium. I swore an oath. I can't allow myself to become entangled with familial bonds as well. Your father did, a voice in the back of my mind seems to say. He did, I concede, but he died when I was a boy, leaving me and my mother destitute. Life as a ranger is dangerous. It's not conducive to family life. I couldn't do that to myself, and more importantly, I couldn't do that to Zara. The logic is sound, and yet a part of me aches at the thought of ever breaking things off with Zara. Doing so would leave a hole in my heart that would probably never be filled. Would life even be worth living after that? No resolution comes to me as I wander around. My thoughts turn endlessly, like a windmill, circling around the only girl in the world that I've ever loved. The path continues forward, wending through sandy flats and rocky foothills. An hour or two passes, and eventually I decide to turn back. Water's getting low. I shake the half-empty skin regrettably. If I'm gone too long, Zara will probably begin to worry about me. As I turn to retrace my steps back to camp, a rumbling noise catches my attention. It sounds like the dangerous growl of a bear. I dip down as I reach for my dagger, ducking behind a small hill covered in wispy dead stalks of grass. After a moment, I hear the sound again. This time, it's accompanied by barking words in some guttural tongue. Demons! Keeping low, I half-crouch and half-walk up to the dune ahead of me, scaling its sandy surface in an attempt to see what lies on the other side. In a wide, barren valley that seems to stretch on forever, a vast army of demons is encamped. Foot soldiers mill about a sea of black tents, blazing green torches and siege equipment, their dark armor glinting in the morning sun. There are tens of thousands of them, hundreds of thousands even, of every shape and variety one could imagine. From my vantage, I can make out gorgons and darkhounds. Black wings flit through the sky. Off in the distance, ferocious beasts in thick steel cages roar and struggle against their constraints. Most terrifying all are the enormous giants lumbering around, their hulking figures standing at more than 20 feet tall, red eyes glowing between two curling horns. "What in the 11 hells are those?" I think with horrified amazement. "They're big enough to knock down entire buildings by themselves." I quickly duck behind the dune, praying that none of the demons saw me. They didn't appear to have any sentries posted. Why would they, here in their own domain? This must be the R'lar's main army, I realize, gripping my dagger fearfully. There's so many of them. Light, I've never even heard of an army so large. Taking a breath to calm my nerves, I tempt fate once more and peek back to study their encampment. As I take it all in, a cold feeling of dread settles in my stomach. That must be the commander's tent, I think, spotting a massive tent in the middle. It seems to radiate blackness, sucking all light into itself. The Prince of Darkness, The demon lord of legend. He must be commanding this army personally. Blowing out an astounded breath, I creep down the dune and out of sight. They must think the Ark is getting close to completely failing. Light almighty, they're poised to strike the minute the shield goes down. Heart heavy, I set off immediately for the slave encampment, moving as quickly and quietly as I can manage. By the time I return, I'm drenched in sweat and near to collapsing from the heat. Pushing through the dizziness, I hurry the last few hundred paces to the maze of tents, searching for Zara so I can tell her what I saw in the desert. It's nearly midday, the sun baking the land like an oven. Many of the wastelanders give me odd looks, no doubt wondering why I was wandering the sands alone. Do they know about the demon army? I wonder, ignoring their curious stares. Do they understand what it means if they get through? I find Zara in the sewing tent with a handful of the other women who are weaving baskets of fibrous weeds. She looks shocked upon seeing my haggard appearance and immediately puts down her basket, coming to meet me at the tent's entrance.
"Owen," she says, concern lining her eyes, "is everything all right?"
Nodding, I wipe the sweat from my forehead with the back of my hand.
"Yes and no. It's complicated. Can we talk?"
"Of course," she replies, wincing as she steps out into the sun.
"Ugh, it's so bright out here. I don't know about you, but my head feels like it's about to explode."
"Yeah," I reply offhandedly, leading her to a shady spot.
"Mine too."
When we're alone, I hesitate, suddenly unsure of what to say. I haven't spoken to her since last night, and I don't know if I should apologize first for what transpired between us. Sensing my apprehension, she reaches out and takes my hand, looking at me with her deep brown eyes.
"Listen, Owen, I know last night was interesting. Neither of us acted like ourselves. I blame the Kurza. I don't think I'll ever have another drop of that stuff as long as I live. But I want you to know that everything's okay. It doesn't change in any way how I feel about you, and I don't harbor any bad feelings about what happened."
"That's not," I begin awkwardly.
"Well, that's good. I'm glad you feel that way. But that's not what I came to speak to you about."
She frowns in confusion.
"It's not?"
"No," I reply. "There's something much bigger going on. I just got back from a hike that took me a few miles south of here." I tell her about all that I observed from up in the dunes, about the massive army of demons and the presence of the siege equipment. I also share with her my suspicions, how the presence of such an army indicates that they're on the verge of an invasion, and that they must know something we don't. The Ark of Radiance must be closer to collapse than we'd previously thought. When I finish, she looks worried.
"Well," she says, "that's not good."
"No, it's not," I agree. "They're not far from here, Zara. Maybe a few hours walking distance. They have every demon you can think of, even giants standing half the height of the walls of Tarsus."
"Light. Baelors."
"Baelors?
Monstrous demonic beasts I read about. I didn't know they actually existed."
Her face is a mixture of surprise and horror. A grave silence settles between us, the weight of this new revelation creating its own set of worries.
"I think you're right," she says at length. "They must know something we don't. It's more important now than ever that we find a way back inside the Ark. The Rangers, the Conclave, everyone needs to be warned."
The sound of feet crunching on the dirt pulls us from our grim conversation. Turning, we see a group of a dozen or so youths converging on our position between the tents, their expressions set with determination. They range from about ages 12 to 17, a mixture of both boys and girls. Their leader, it looks like, is the long-haired boy named Yari. He stands at the forefront with his arms crossed before him. Zara looks over the group. Quirking an eyebrow, she asks something in their language. Yari replies confidently, his fellows bobbing their heads in approval. She frowns, looking confused, and they go back and forth for a few minutes. Finally, Zara pauses,
her frown deepening as she bites her lower lip.
"What do they want?" I ask in a low voice.
She turns to look at me, her eyes tightening in worry.
"He says they want us to teach them
how to fight."
"They want to learn how to fight?"
I can't help but feel surprised. Ever since coming to this place, the people have seemed beaten down, unwilling or unable to defend themselves. Not so with these youths, it seems. Looking closer at their countenance, I can see that they appear eager, almost like they're trying to find a way to make some trouble. There's a fire there, a fire that can be stoked into a blaze with the right training.
"I'm not sure what to say to them," Zara says. "Their elders would be furious if they were to hear about this."
I smile, looking at Yari and giving him a small nod of approval.
"I think this is just what we need at a time like this."
Reaching to my belt, I pull out my dagger and hand it over to him, hilt first.
"Owen!" Zara hisses. "What are you doing?"
"Trying something," I reply without looking back. Many of the youths cringe as I proffer the dagger, scuttling back as if I'm handing them a viper. Yari, though, stands his ground. Bravely, if a little hesitantly, he accepts the weapon, grasping it firmly in his sun-darkened hands.
"They only want to fight to defend themselves," I think, watching as Yari examines the quill dagger with a mixture of curiosity and wonder. "To hells with what their elders think."
"Tell them that we'll teach them," I say after a moment. Zara starts.
"Are you certain? I can see this going badly very fast."
"I am," I reply calmly. "The world is ending, Zara. They just want to know how to fight, to protect themselves from the demons. This is the right thing to do."
She considers this and nods, though she doesn't look too happy about it. Sighing, she tells them, speaking their tongue in a low voice. This prompts excited whispering to break out among them.
"All right," I say, still looking at Yari. "There's no time to lose. Let's get to work."